I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore. It's another episode, and today's episode, well, this feels nice saying this. Today's guest is Butch Vig. You know what? Go back a year, the thought that I'd ever be sitting down and having a chat with the gentleman that produced, you know, some absolutely monumentous records. I never thought it would happen. And it did. And it was a joy, as you're about to find out. Butch Vig is an absolute delight and obviously has incredible taste in records. And we discuss those. Before we get on with that chat, just a quick thanks to Ashley for facilitating that. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. And thanks to 76, who produces this podcast, who's been doing a smashing job, because we've all been kind of at the mercy of Zoom and all of these remote recordings for the duration of lockdown. And so, he's doing his best to give you a nice warm sounding podcast, and he's doing a cracking job. So thank you. If you enjoy this episode, when you finish, please go and have a rummage in the back catalogue. You can hear my chats with the likes of all sorts of diverse acts, from Deftones to Chuck D to Mel C, through to Chic, through to James Lavelle, Madness. It goes all over the place. There's some wonderful chats to be had. So go and have a rummage in the archives and subscribe. That really helps, because this podcast is a labour of love. So any kind of support and tweets and shares and all of that, it all goes in the pot and it all helps. So I'm done with all of that. Let's get on with today's episode. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with Butch Vig.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin.
Listen up, I've only got another new sponsor, Egg Fried. It's this super cool clothing label. And if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humour in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this. They have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, EGGSALAD, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Egg Fried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. I mean, do you know what? I normally sort of say, like, we'll start recording now, but let's just keep talking, because it's kind of something that, you know, I like to touch on with the intro anyway. It's like kind of how, you know, it's impossible not to have a conversation and not touch on the last sort of 6-7 months and how it's affected, you know, the creative industry. And I just wondered, you know, how you found the last sort of 6-7 months, both personally and professionally, Butch.
Well, as luck would have it, Garbage was in the studio finishing their new album. And the last day that we were all together was that Friday, and then they locked LA down on Saturday. So right. It wasn't scheduled that way, but that's how it turned out. So we got the bulk of the recording done. there are a lot of little things to finish. Shirley had to finish a lyric on one song, and Duke had to do a guitar thing on another song. But the core of the songs were done, and originally we thought we'd be finished within like 3 weeks and then start mixing. Well, we just finished mixing last week and are getting the record mastered now. I think once the lockdown kicked in, all of us sort of felt like discombobulated in a way. It took me a while to sort of get, I guess, to feel creative, you know. It just felt like you sort of go into outer space, just sort of trying to grapple with the reality. And I think the hardest thing was realizing that everybody's schedule was completely disrupted. We were supposed to go on a long tour through the summer and the fall with Garbage with Alanis Morissette and Liz Phair, and we were really excited about that. And that's been pushed back till we don't know when, you know. And I know so many musicians who make a living from touring, and that's completely been taken away from them. So it's very disruptive times, but I think as this has been going on longer and longer, a lot of people I know, like yourself and me, have been finding ways to get creative, you know, just to channel your that spirit into something, you know. Otherwise you go stir crazy, you know. Absolutely. Just sitting in a holding pattern.
Definitely. Well, let's talk music, because that's a nice distraction from the world of COVID. So I'm going to start the playlist now, Butcher. I'm going to ask you for question number one, the song with the greatest ever intro.
Okay, I have to give you a little info on this. I went down a total rabbit hole, Stuart. I went kind of crazy.
Great.
And I was like, okay, should it be a drum fill? Should it be a guitar riff? Should it be the whole band? And like, should it be something modern or something classic rock? And I wrote a list of like about maybe 20 different ones down. And I thought, okay, if it's going to be a guitar, it could be Guns N' Roses, Sweet Child of Mine. It could be Blue Oyster Cult, Don't Fear the Reaper, which also has the cowbell once the groove kicks in. It could be something as simple as a Teen Spirit, you know, the little four scratchy chords that Kurt plays and Dave Grohl plays that drum fill. It's pretty powerful. But I kind of decided I wanted to pick something that was a little bit more complex, and I narrowed it down to two songs, and I'll give you my runner-up,
okay,
which was Come Together by the Beatles.
Lovely.
Because it's got the most amazing bass line, doom, boom, boo-doo-doo, and Ringo's drum part. Like, whoever thought of that? It's so cool. And there's this little guitar in the background, and someone's going, ch-ch, you know, a little vocal thing. It's just mesmerizing. But it got beat out by my number one pick, which starts with this really airy, spacey little guitar and flute and some washy, tinkly cymbals and some chords and hangs and hangs, and this slow drum build kicks into the most glorious saxophone riff ever, Jerry Rafferty's Baker Street.
Come Baker Street, nice.
I mean, every time I hear that on the radio, I go, this is so epic. It's a cool song, and then when it goes to the verse, it's a total shift, you know, and it goes into a totally different feel, but it's a pretty epic intro, you got to admit.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I want to ask you, Butch, as somebody that's been making music for, you know, quite a time now, I'm interested in how you approach songwriting and intro from, you know, the early days of Garbage through to now. And the way that people listen to music now is far different from how it was, you know, in the 90s, you know, with streaming, and everything seems to be very fast, and there seems to be like no fat left on the songs. It's just trimmed to the bone, and it's like, you know, let's just have these 2 minute songs, you know, start with a chorus. And I guess a lot of that is pop music more so than other genres. But I just wondered, have these movements and the way that, you know, that pop music's created, has that impacted on you as an artist and how you write?
Yeah, you know, I think intros are always interesting, and they can be kind of tricky because there are no rules. And obviously, if you're writing a pop song, like you said, don't bore us, get to the chorus. You want to just boom, get in. And like the early Beatles are a perfect example of that. It's like sometimes they would just start, help, I need, and it's like just go boom right into the chorus. But I think from an artist's point of view, an intro can give you a chance to set a mood or a tone for a song, and it can also set something up so when a verse kicks in or a riff kicks in, it takes a U-turn, so it takes you on a journey. And to me, it's always, I find it a challenge and more interesting to write songs like that, where you use that little moment to set a song up, and you can do something with it rhythmically, sonically. You can put a riff in, you know, it could be a riff that appears later in the song, and there's a lot of different ways you can do it. But I always look at intros and ends of songs as very important and really interesting. I don't like to fade songs either, Stuart. I just don't like. I sort of feel like that's cheating. It's like you couldn't figure out the end, really, so you just fade the end down. You know, there's. Yeah. I think maybe Garbage and our the 140 songs we've recorded, there's only maybe one or two fades. And it was because we had to mix it really quick and we didn't have an outro, so we just, we'll just fade it down. Yeah.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take you back now, and for track two, Butch, I'm going to ask you the first song that you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
It's a song written by Jimmy Webb, sung by Glenn Campbell, Wichita lineman. Oh. It's one of the most sublime, perfect pop songs ever. And the reason I think it resonates with me so much is because it resonated with my parents. My mom was a music teacher, and she played a lot of music around the house when I was growing up. So I was exposed to a huge variety of styles of music, and that was very important to me in terms of growing up to be a music producer. But that song would always just get her. And my dad, who was a stoic Norwegian, hard to see any emotion from him, he would get sort of misty-eyed when he would hear it. And you know, it's a really simple song. It sounds simple. The chord progression is actually quite complicated, but it's those lines. And I need you more than want you, and I want you for all time. The Wichita lineman is still on the line. It's about loneliness and desire, and it just all these emotions all wrapped up in those simple lines. And so whenever I hear it, I still get goosebumps. And it makes me think of growing up as a kid, you know, and hearing that song played. And, it's one of those songs, you know, there's maybe 20 songs or 30 songs growing up. You go, damn, I wish I'd written that. And that's one that I don't have the chops to write a song that good, but it's absolutely perfect.
And what was the emotion, Butch?
I think it's like a sadness of something that's missing, you know, this loneliness, especially when he stops and the little guitar just sort of the telegraph on the way, dee 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 dee, and you think someone's sending a message. It's haunting, you know. Yeah. It's really haunting. It's not an upbeat pop song, you know. It's about desire and loneliness and trying to find a connection, you know. It's a lovely song.
It's got a kind of a sort of feeling of like longing about it, hasn't it? It's a beautiful, beautiful record. Butch, have you ever heard REM do that?
I have not. No.
Yeah, it was at the end of a live DVD or something I had of one of their shows, and they sound check with it,
cool.
It's really cool. Like Stipe's vocals on that are pretty spectacular.
Right on. I'll check that out, Stuart. I'm a huge REM fan.
Yeah, it's nice.
Murmur is in my like top 20 greatest records ever. Or maybe top 30. I love that record so much. I mean, I love a lot of their records, but Murmur is just incredible.
I don't know if it's out in the States, but in the UK, the Song Exploder thing's on Netflix. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
It is. I haven't seen it yet, but I know the guy who runs it. Yeah.
Have you not seen the REM one? They all four of them. Bill Berry's back for it as well, and they sit and they pull apart Losing My Religion, and it's wonderful.
Is that on Netflix?
Yeah.
I'll watch it this afternoon, man. Yeah. I'm crazy for shows like that.
Oh, it's a great watch, Butch. You're in for a treat there.
Cool.
For track three, I'm going to ask you the song that reminds you of your time at school.
Well, school, I'm going to call that high school, 13 or 14 to 17 years old, 18 years old, something like that. As I mentioned earlier, I grew up with a lot of different music in the house. Like my mom bought Beatles records, but she played Frank Sinatra and the Tijuana Brass and Elvis Presley and Thelonious Monk. But I started getting into rock and roll. And I think one of my favorite bands was Alice Cooper. And like a lot of kids, I think because they looked outrageous, you have to rebel against your parents in some form or another, right? So. And I love the album Killer. I put up when you got the gatefold, you put up the poster, and it's this thing of Alice, with a rope around his neck. And I'd put it in my locker, and kids would walk by. And after like 3 or 4 days, the superintendent from the school said, Vig, you got to take that down. That's offensive or whatever. But I have to say it's Alice Cooper's 18. I used to play that song nonstop. And when I was 16, I started my first band called Eclipse in Viroqua, Wisconsin. That's where I'm from. And that was one of the songs we learned. And so I was just thrilled every night to be, playing these little tiny taverns in these back roads in Wisconsin or like the high school dance or the county fair, whatever it was. And that was one of the songs that we played in the set. And I remember our singer would just go crazy. He would do the whole 18, and I love it. It was great, man, and yeah. I'm still a huge Alice Cooper fan. When I was producing Wasting Light with the Foos, Dave Grohl is a huge Alice Cooper fan, as is Pat Smear. And we'd be doing a part and recording a part, and Pat Smear would look at me and go, "Hey, Butch, would that be good enough for an Alice Cooper record?" I go, "Yeah, that's okay. You nailed it." So we started to use that as a reference.
Oh, wonderful. In regards to school, Butch, how did you get on? Did you enjoy school?
I got along okay. I didn't like junior high much. It was 12 to 15 or so. Like a lot of kids, I felt like a misfit. I kind of had a hard time connecting with friends and stuff. But the last 4 years of high school, I kind of got a good core of people who I hung with, and I was always pretty outgoing, so I wasn't really an introverted kid, so I did have a lot of friends, and for some reason I was able to hang with the jocks, and I was able to hang with the stoners, and I was able to hang with the arty kids, so I was really involved in music in school also. I played in the band, and I played in the orchestra. And as I said, I started our band in Viroqua with a couple of my buddies. And so pretty much I was, immersed in music the whole time.
Sorry for the interruption. It's just a super quick advert. The Signal is a platform for podcasters to launch a fully featured app onto the App Store and Google Play in just a matter of days. It allows you to monetize your podcast with in-app subscriptions and offer in exchange a whole world of features for your listeners, like exclusive episodes, ad-free versions of episodes, YouTube live streams, downloads, and much, much more. The Signal allows you to pull all your best content into one place that you control. No more trying to play the algorithm. Just connect directly with your audience and give them more of what they love. For just a small monthly cost and no contracts, you get your app into stores in days, not months. No big upfront development costs, no waiting months for beta versions, just all your content under your control. And even better, if you tell them Stu sent you, they will waive the £100 setup fee. So go to thesignal.app and take your podcast to the next level. Back to my podcast. A few questions regarding those times and the impact of music on you there. When you would listen to music, would, you know, obviously if you was in bands, you was already playing at this point, Butch, but would you pull apart the records in your head? Would you deconstruct the songs and try and work out how they were put together?
Totally. I got into, I mean, this is, I guess, I didn't even know it at the time, but that's what led to me getting into production. I would put headphones on up in my room at night and listen to records over and over, trying to figure out what they were doing, you know. Sometimes my dad would come in and go to sleep. It'd be like 1 a.m, I'm still listening to Killer by Alice Cooper, whatever. And I would always look at albums, too, you know, look at the credits. And sometimes they had information, sometimes hardly anything. So you sort of had to make it up in your head, you know. Yeah. Nowadays, you can find out anything about anyone on the internet with a click of a mouse. But it was all kind of a mystery back then. So
there's a beauty in that, I think, Butch. I think there's a nice kind of element of wonder to that, you know, of not being able to find out what your favorite pop star had for breakfast, which you can see on Twitter every day. It's like, I kind of like that sort of elusiveness of like your rock and roll stars are up there. You don't know about them. It's mysterious, right?
Yeah. You want your rock stars to be special. You don't necessarily want them to be the dude next door, you know? And I have a theory, Stuart, that sometime in the near future, there's going to be an artist who, he could be hip hop or a folk singer, or she could be a hip hop or folk singer. I don't know, but I think they could write lyrics like someone like Bob Dylan and have sort of this zeitgeist moment, much like Nirvana did. But I have a theory that they're not going to be on social media. They're going to maybe play a show and the song is going to come out and they're going to disappear. And because of that, everybody's going to go crazy and want them more because they're holding themselves back from giving everything to everyone, you know?
Wouldn't that be great?
And if you figure out who that artist is, call me because I want to produce him.
Wonderful, wonderful. Just quickly, Butch, I'm just going to go and turn the light on in this room because I'm literally sitting in darkness now. The sun's gone in and I'm just sitting.
I can see you. Yeah, I can see you're sort of slipping in the darkness there.
2 seconds.
Okay, cool. There you go.
Oh, that's better. That's
there you
better.
Go. Now you're looking good.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Was you a confident kid?
Not when I was younger, as I said, but when I got to around 13 or I guess probably more around 14 or so and started hanging with a pack of people and really got into music, then I think I got more confidence. Before that, I was kind of a nerd, you know. And so it took me a while to sort of get my grounding, if that makes any sense, you know, to kind of get that confidence. I see that in, like, I have a 14-year-old daughter, and, it's, you know, being a teenager is hard, man. It's just because you're trying to figure out what to do and how to. You want to be cool with your friends. You want to be different, have your own identity, but you don't. You want to fit in perfectly, and it's a tough time. And I'm lucky that I had music to sort of pull me through all that.
Yeah, I've got a 14-year-old daughter, and I know exactly what you're saying, Butch. And it's strange because I kind of, you know, encourage you to, like, you know, just be yourself and, like, don't worry about it. If you think, but it's easier said than done as a 47-year-old adult, you know, the pressures of, you know, of being 14, you do want to fit in. You don't want to be the square peg. Do you know what I mean? It is it's a difficult time. And you'll always look back and just go, oh, man, I should have just done that and just put it out there.
Yeah,
at the time, it's different, right? You said you was in the band at school. Was music and creativity, like, encouraged at your school?
It was. We had a great music. The guy who ran the band and ran sort of the music department in my high school, Bob Bestel, he was super outgoing, very charismatic, Everybody loved, you know, I loved going to band practice because it was fun. And then he also got me into orchestra. I got into marching band, you know, so you'd march in the parades and playing the snare drum or the bass drum or whatever. And I also played piano. I stopped playing piano when I sort of morphed into playing drums. But I played piano through like first grade through sixth grade or something. So I had a pretty good background with piano starting out before I took up drums. But I think a lot of it came from my mom. She played music constantly in the house. And every night at dinner, she'd put some record on. Like I said, it could be pop music. It could be a musical like Camelot or On a Clear Day, Rise and Look Around You. You know, it was just, I never knew what she was going to put on. And yeah. She always would say, listen to that melody and you know, pick out the melody over the chords. And I would go, yeah, it's great. And so it didn't matter what style of music was. Like, I've never felt like I was a snob. You know, I only like techno or I only like punk rock or rock and roll. I mean, I love all those things. And I think that was, that sort of background for me was very instrumental in my path as I've gone forward into production.
Did you know what you wanted to be when you was at school?
I didn't. Oddly enough, I went to Madison, UW-Madison after high school. And I went into med school because my dad was a small-town doctor, and everybody in my family had pretty much everybody, my cousins and nephews, everybody went into the medical profession, either doctors or nurses or dentists, and it was kind of expected. And I went to school 2 years and at the university and then dropped out and started playing in bands in Madison. And then I eventually, after about a year and a half, I went back to college part-time, but I went into music and film. And I got a degree in comm arts and film, but I took a lot of music courses, especially electronic music. So again, once I sort of found myself more in the creative arts part of the university, I totally embraced it.
Wonderful. Well, keeping it back around them times and maybe a little earlier, for track four, Butch, what was the first record you bought from a record store?
I remember distinctly. I had been going to the Viroqua swimming pool, and they kept playing this band on Top 40 every day. Radio was hard back then. In Viroqua, in the morning, they would play polka music until noon. And then there'd be country music from like noon. There'd be the Farm Report, and then country music from noon till 3. And from like 3:30 to 5, it was called Mail Train. It was Top 40. And we would usually go to the pool like after school, but more so in the summer. And I remember hearing these songs by a band called Creedence Clearwater Revival. I remember hearing Susie Q, which I loved, and I just loved John Fogerty's voice. And so one day I went to the record store. This is maybe after their third or fourth single, I don't remember exactly, but I bought Who'll Stop the Rain and Travelin' Band. I think it was a double A-side. And I remember hearing that guitar riff on the start of Who'll Stop the Rain, that chimey guitar riff, and I loved John Fogerty's voice. I mean, he just had this sort of growl and sort of a soulful voice. I didn't know it at the time, but that was a protest song about the Vietnam War. I mean, he wrote these really simple songs, but quite complex lyrics. And my mom pointed that out. At one point, she said, you know, I think he's singing about Vietnam. I go, really? I just thought he was singing about stopping the rain. But I was too dumb to understand how you can write a message in such a simple lyric. He also wrote, I think, Bad Moon Rising was written about Richard Nixon, you know, and that's also another great song he wrote. Anyway, I ended up at some point I collected all of their singles. I had like Cosmos Factor, I had all their album stuff, but I love Creedence Clearwater Revival. Years later, I got to meet John Fogerty when I did the documentary with Dave Grohl, the Sound City, where he had a lot of different people come in and jam. And Fogerty's cool, man. He's the dude. He still sings. He can sing great. He cranks his guitar super loud. But he's still in fine form. And when you hear his story, he got so ripped off by the label that he signed to. He's lucky that he made any money at all. It's like he literally was a slave. You know, it's one of those stories where when you ink the pen, that's like one of the worst record deals of all time. And yet he fought through it, you know, and had an amazing career. But yeah, he's a great artist, and I still love Creedence Clearwater.
In regards to record shops, Butch, like, how important a place were they for you growing up?
Well, they were pretty important, but they were limited in Viroqua. Viroqua was a town of about 3,000 people, mostly farmers,
right. Okay.
Norwegian farmers, farming community. And there were two or three stores. There was a music store. I remember buying the Creedence single there because they would have top 40 singles. And most of the albums that they had were popular albums. It was hard to find anything interesting, you know, like cool stuff. But once I started hearing like rock, FM rock radio, there was a slightly bigger town, La Crosse, Wisconsin, on the Mississippi River. That was about 30 miles away. And every two or three weekends, my mom would go up there to do some shopping or something. And I would go, this is when I was about, you know, 14 or 15, and she would drop me at the record store, and they had bigger record stores, you know, where you also they had smoking pipes and Nehru shirts and blacklight posters on the walls and stuff. And that was the first time I would go in and start rummaging through records, and you'd go in the store, and they'd always have a record up and be playing it, you know. So it was cool to hang around and they go, what are they playing? You know, and then you'd go up and look and you could see the jacket up by the front checkout desk. And so that was maybe if I was lucky, once a month I'd go up there and I'd save up my money and usually buy a couple albums. And that was the best, you know, it was. And my mom totally trusted me. You know, I wasn't going to get into trouble. I was a pretty good kid. I wasn't going to get into trouble. I was like, Mom, you can shop as long as you want. Just leave me here and I'm fine. And it was cool.
Wonderful.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, post-school for track five, Butch, the song that soundtracked your years clubbing.
Well, clubbing, Stuart, for me, was probably different than what I guess you call in the UK. I never really went to taverns or bars in Madison, which would be like my university years. That's what I call my clubbing years. Either I would go and see a place where it was a live show or a band, or you'd go to a bar and it was a jukebox.
Yeah.
So you didn't really have control over the music, depending on where you went. You know, you'd have to see what you could play, and it was, again, usually top 40 stuff. Sometimes you could find music that you liked, but I was really into punk and new wave and bands like Roxy Music. You know, I was the president of the Roxy Music fan club in Madison when I was a sophomore at the university there, and I felt a kinship to a lot of the punk bands. Going back to what we said earlier, I loved my rock stars on pedestals, the untouchable icons, but when punk and new wave came out, I realized I could do that. You know, these bands are—they're kind of doing what I can do. I'm an okay drummer. I'm not a great drummer, but I can get together with my buddies and we can start a band and we can do that. And so, the whole sort of new wave punk revolution was inspiring for me.
What sort
and
of band?
Because of that, I think the soundtrack to a lot of those nights when I would go out, before I would go out, I would blast the first Ramones album.
Yeah,
like if I wanted to get psyched up, it was Blitzkrieg Bop. at absolute stun volume, as loud as my speakers would go. And I think, you know, I played that first record. I played it so many times, I wore it out. I think I've probably owned like four copies over my lifetime, because I played every one, I swear to God, 1,000 times.
And was it that kind of like that DIY ethic of punk that just meant it was attainable for you? Like, you know, I can do this. It's like, it's, you know, it is like, it, I mean, if, I miss punk by a couple, just by a couple of years, and I look back and I just think what an incredible time that must have been. If you know, you've got a cheap guitar or a, you know, cheap bass, and it's like, and all of a sudden, especially in the UK, from, you know, this huge kind of booming progressive rock to all of a sudden, you know, there's the Damned just like racking out, like, you know, three or four chords and just screaming these songs. It must have just been, oh wow, we can do this. This is like, this is DIY. This is perfect. Like, did that really resonate with you?
Totally. I mean, it got me into the band that I started with Duke Erickson, who's now in Garbage. We started a band called Spooner, which was like a new wave sort of garage band, and we started writing our own music. And there was a club that we used to go to pretty much every night called Merlin's, which is on State Street, which is like the main sort of street through the university in Madison. And they, every single night, I swear to God, they had every cool band that was happening in America or from the UK. I mean, I saw the Psychedelic Furs. I saw U2 play with about maybe 30 people in the room. You know, Iggy Pop came through. I saw REM play to six people, you know. But they had big shows there too, but it was just like, that's where we went every night. We would go to Merlin's. And Steve, the other guitarist in Garbage, for some inexplicable reason, he was a bouncer there. He's like one of the most mellow, quiet, reserved dudes. And they go, Steve, you're the guy who ran the bar Serge Ledwith. He was a real character. He's, Steve, I'll hire you to be security. Steve was like, okay. But I would listen to the Ramones every night and just get ramped up. And then we would go to Merlin's and see whoever was playing there. That was the local hotspot for Mass. I saw Susie and the Banshees. I wish I had a list here, Stuart, but it was like every night for like 4 years, that was ground zero for going to see cool music in Madison.
Oh, what a time. What a time to see bands. For track six, Butch, favorite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Well, there's a little bit of a connection here. Joseph Arthur's In the Sun. I don't know if you know that song. It is absolutely sublime. There's something about it that reminds me of Wichita Lineman, a little bit, completely two different songs. But it's about someone who's gone from your life, and you're trying to reconcile. They're somewhere else, and you're here, and imagining what they're doing or not doing. It makes me cry every time I hear it. We played it at my wedding. My wife loves the song too, and you know, a lot of people say, "Why do you play such a sad song?" And it's not really sad, but it's like I said, it just gets me every time. It's absolutely beautiful, and after the wedding, I said I played it because it makes me feel alive.
Yeah.
It just, I feel like when I hear this song, I feel like I'm a human being. Like, I love hearing songs that bum me out or push buttons in me that make me feel emotional, because I feel like I'm living and breathing, you know. So, and that's a killer song, In the Sun. And REM covered it. REM loved it too. So there's, if you go to Spotify, I'm sure it's on Spotify. I haven't checked, but In the Sun by Joseph Arthur, and there's probably a REM version too, but you have to listen to Joseph's original cover first, the original version first. It's absolutely gorgeous.
With records that jump at you, Butch, like that, do you obsess over them? If you find a track, will you play it over and over and over and over?
And over and over and over. You know, I find that I still do that, but I find I do it more when I'm driving. And even going back to when I lived in Madison, when I had a CD player in my car, sometimes I would put on a CD and I wouldn't change it for 2 months. I would just listen to the same album over and over and over. Records like that were Marquee Moon by Television.
Yeah.
Violator by Depeche Mode.
Oh, wow.
I think I left that in my car for a year. And I had a pretty kick-ass sound system in my car, too. So it was loud and clear.
Yeah.
And, man, Violator still, to this day, sounds so damn good.
Oh, it's the venue I run in Essex, Butch, I live like sort of two minutes from where Depeche Mode formed, and they played their first shows in my venue.
And, wow!
And so they're our hometown heroes. That band means a hell of a lot to not just me, but a lot of people from where I live. And that was the album for me. It was like when, you know, it got darker and darker, and then Violator, and it was like, do you know what? It wasn't even Enjoy the Silence. I think it was Policy of Truth was the one that I just thought, that's the one. And Halo,
yeah.
The track Halo is on that album as well, isn't it? And oh.
That's also in my top 20 rock albums of all time. I mean, I love that album.
It's
kind of perfect. Yeah.
Okay.
A little side note on that, too. When the first Garbage record came out, we were signed to this Mushroom Infectious over in the UK. And our manager over there at the time had been passing around some promo copies, and somehow Martin Gore got a copy and sent a note that he really, really loved the tracks on the Garbage record. He said, especially I love the song Queer. And I had his number to call him, so I called his from the studio. I called, and it was his voicemail, but he had Queer on his answering music.
Wow,
on the
what a moment.
I never got to talk to him. I was like, Martin, it's Butch Vig. This is so cool, man. Love you guys or whatever. I don't remember what I said, but it was just cool that he was a fan back in a small way. That was
That's
a cool
amazing.
Moment.
Have you got to work with them, Butch?
I did a remix for him once for on the song In Your Room.
Oh.
And it was cool. I met them a couple times later after the first record came out, but they started playing that song live, the version that I did. It had a different arrangement. There was like a sort of a distorted piano intro, and I changed some of the groove parts, and they loved it so much. And when I saw them play, that's the version that they played. The remix that I did, which is really cool, and yeah, I love Depeche Mode.
That I mean, I saw him on the Violator tour, but that devotional tour. I mean, I know, you know, Dave Gahan was in a strange old place at that time, but as a front man at that point, he was untouchable. It was like
his vocals
as well. Like I watched some of them shows back, and In Your Room, a prime example, that and Condemnation, his vocals are sublime. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Last track, Butch, and you get to play DJ. A song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
Okay, this is obviously, I'm being really selfish here because this is a band that I produced who I love, love, love dearly, and they're called Against Me. I've done two records with them, and this is a track from the second album I did, White Crosses, and it's a zeitgeist moment. When I hear it, the hair in the back of my neck stands up. To me, it reminds me of The Clash. I think it's just a brilliant song. It's called Teenage Anarchist.
Wonderful.
And it's brilliant.
I had Laura on the podcast last week.
And, amazing, right?
Yeah, she's wonderful. So cool. And had a good chat. So, yeah, gives me great pleasure to add that to the playlist. Yeah,
that's cool. That's really cool.
So, Butch, hopefully, you know, we're going to come out of 2020 in a much more positive place than it started. What are you looking forward to of kind of, you know, putting this lockdown and pandemic behind us, and we're staying positive for this. What are you looking forward to personally, and what are you up to professionally?
Well, I have been very lucky. I have been creative, and I have a home studio I'm sitting in here, so it's nothing fancy. It's like a bedroom, but I've got a pretty big Pro Tools rig, and I've got drums and piano out there and guitar amps and stuff. And I've been, you know, finishing the Garbage record, which we just did. I finished back in February a new record with my band 5 Billion and Diamonds, which is a side band with my buddies, DJ buddies, James Grillo and Andy Jenks. And that comes out in I think about 3 weeks or so, I think. I want to say November 11th. And that was a really fun record to make because we did a lot of collaboration. The three of us write music, and then we work with a lot of different singers. Like, we work with Ebbett Lundberg from Soundtrack of Our Lives, David Scheltzel from a band called Ocean Blue, James Bagshaw from the British band Temples. He sings on one of the tracks. And so it's a collaboration, but it's really fun. A lot of it is done file sharing because I live here, and a lot of the singers live all over. But we do get together, and the thing that I have missed most in the last 6 months is being in a room and collaborating with people. You know, as much as we can do it like this, sending files back and forth and doing Zoom meetings, it's special when you're in a room with creative people to see what happens. And one of the reasons I love going into the recording studios, you can't predict what's going to happen. You know, in my head, I think, oh, here's what we're going to do today. And then you start the creative process, and it always goes on these tangents, and that's what's exciting about it. And that's what I miss really a lot, is just collaborating with people. And also being on stage, that moment where you're sharing a room with an audience, you know. And I'm hoping by... people feel safe to go out in venues again, at least fingers crossed. I hope that's going to happen.
Yeah, I hope so too. I hope so too. Butch, it's been a real pleasure getting to talk records with you. Best of luck with all the projects. And thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
Yeah, Stuart, I appreciate it, man. This is really fun. And you want to do it again someday? Let's do it again.
Oh, I'd love to, Butch. Next time we'll talk gigs. We do this sometimes when guests come back on. We do these questions, but based around gigs and early gigs.
Oh, cool.
Gigs and
that'll
things
be fun.
Like that. So right on. We'll try and get that sorted. So I'm going to let you go and watch the REM documentary on Song Exploder now, Butch. So,
all right, and check out In the Sun by Joseph Arthur.
I'm on it. Have a wonderful day, Butch. Thank you.
Thanks, Stuart.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
There you have it. Just had a chat with Butch Vig. What an absolutely delightful man. It was wonderful. I hope you got as much enjoyment out of listening to that as I did talking to Butch. Thanks ever so much for listening. And like I said at the beginning, please go and have a rummage in the archives, because there's 180-odd episodes now of some wonderful pod chats with actors, musicians, DJs, producers, comedians. Go and have a little look in the archives and see what tickles your fancy. And you can support the podcast. I have a Patreon page if you want to support it over there. I'll put up radio shows and stuff over there. You can find out about all of this at offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Okay, we're out of here. Stay safe, lovely people. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beat and Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whippin.